When it comes to building a business empire online while intentionally cultivating a thriving life at home with kids, well, there is no roadmap. It's not easy. But the great news is, we're not alone. We live in a crazy world that is truly unlike any other time in our history. And if you're like me, you've got an impact of your own to make. But you're not willing to sacrifice your relationship with those that you love in order to get it. My name is Stephanie Dove Blake, and this is the Powerful Parenting Journey podcast, where we'll journey together to learn what it means to be a truly powerful parent. Let's go. Welcome back to the Powerful Parenting Journey podcast. I am here today with Dana Abraham, and I am so excited to have her on. She is actually the author of Calm the Chaos, which is a phenomenal book. I will admit I haven't finished it all the way through, but I have just so enjoyed your book and just getting to know you. I met you briefly at, I believe it was Funnel Hacking Live, right? It was Funnel Hacking Live. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And just loved her personality and the things that you have been doing in the parenting space inspire me, just really inspire me, especially with the solutions that you're bringing to the table and the hard conversations that you're bringing up for people that I think more often than not feel like they're alone. And, and I've been one of those people, that has had a, out of the box kid that really threw me for a loop. And I had no idea what I was doing or what was even happening. And so Dana, I'm just so excited to have you on. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, I am so honored to be here, and you are doing such great things, and you inspire me as well. So I think this is going to be a fun conversation.
Absolutely. So tell me, how did you get into this calm the chaos mode as far as writing a book and coming into parenting? Like what brought you to this point?
Well, I kind of joke around that I was born into chaos. And after just spending 10 days with my extended family, I think that's not even a joke anymore. I think that's just the truth. I was born into chaos. I was raised with one of three siblings, one of which was a bipolar brother. So I received the end of like all of his aggressive meltdowns and his big explosions. And when I became a teacher, my favorite kids were the kids in the classroom who really struggled to sit still, the ones that struggled to pay attention, the ones that came with a paper trail behind them. And they were the ones that the teachers talked about in the teacher's lounge, the ones that the parents like came with their heads hung low the first day of school. And I taught preschool, and these kids already knew it, you know? Wow. And so when I became a parent, I thought, I got this gig figured out. I was the sibling to a really hard kid. I've taught the hardest kids. Like, I'm going to be the world's best parent. And I actually imagined like Ed McMahon coming to my front door with a big check and balloons and like a parade behind him and flowers with world's best parent and a check. Like, it was going to be a whole thing. That didn't happen. Instead, my firstborn was kicked out of preschool. He was in trouble almost every day in kindergarten. And by second grade, he was suspended more days than he was in school.
Oh.
In third grade, I was called to school yet again. And it was a really big moment where, he had a big explosive meltdown. He was in, you know, the office behind glass. And I got carted into the principal's office, and she had a police officer there. And she said, you have two options. You can either take him home, don't bring him back till you figure out what's wrong with him, or you can let this officer take him into custody. And it was pretty much right there that I made a decision and realized we just had to do something different for my son. Mm-hmm. So when I started online, I really didn't want to be a parenting expert. I didn't feel like one at all. I mean, my kid was the kid getting kicked out of school. So I didn't want to talk about parenting. I didn't want to share any of that, but I did want to share what was really happening. I wanted to be really authentic and really raw and not sugarcoat things, because every time I searched things online, all I found was these perfect homeschool routines and beautiful reading nooks, and everyone had it all figured out. And I was like, I can't be the only one who doesn't know what they're doing. And so that's what set me on this journey 10 years ago of just, you know, I had two goals. I wanted my kid to not hate himself for not fitting into the world around him. And I wanted him to not hate the world for not understanding him. Mm-hmm. And then I just dug in and shared my journey along the way.
Wow. You know, Dana, I really, really, really wish I knew you about 20 years ago when I'm in the thick of it, you know, with my firstborn, those exact things, you know, not wanting him to not like himself because of how the world perceived him, and then also not wanting him to hate the world because of all of that. And at an early age, somehow, I just through people and books, I learned that, you know, there are out of the box children. And I still tried to bring school at home whenever we were homeschooling. I knew enough that I knew we needed to homeschool, but I was still trying to recreate school at home, which was just as painful and difficult and just not working for us. So, what did that look like when you had that turning point and you were like, all right, line in the sand, we're going to do things differently? What did that look like for you?
So when I first brought him home, and I don't want to paint a picture like it was magical once he came home, we still had many, many, many difficult years. I would say up until about 5 years ago, we were still having extremely difficult years. But when I brought him home, it was less about the academics and less about we're going to read this book and do this worksheet and we're going to follow this curriculum to a T. And it was more of listening to him and becoming attuned to him and figuring out what makes him tick. And even when he couldn't tell me, I still was constantly like watching and notating and figuring out. Okay, he does this when he does this. Okay, that's happening here. All right, we can be here for 5 minutes instead of 10 minutes. And so I started to really just unravel all the things that were going on. And I focused on being his trusted and safe place where he could have his big emotions, where he could not hold it together and not know how to do all the things. And I wanted him to know that I would always be there. No matter what, no matter what struggles he was going through in school and that sort of thing. And so we tried school many more times because we thought we had it figured out. He wanted to go back to the public school. He went back. It was not a great fit, even though everything on paper looked really great. And so then COVID happened. So he came home again. We ended up moving to another state. And I mean, he's 18 now, and he ended up graduating from a public school. But by the time he graduated from public school, he knew what worked and what didn't for him. And it was definitely extreme. And so there were classes that he did not excel in. And those were the classes where the teachers were not willing to get to know him or understand him or know where he was coming from. And then he had classes that he got straight A's in. And it wasn't just the easy classes. It was like engineering and graphic design and robotics and these classes that other kids would have really struggled in. But because the teachers took time to get to know who he is and what he was about and would listen to me, I'd have his English teacher would call and say, okay, this isn't working. What do you do at home that works for you? And I would be able to share what works. And then she was able to mimic that at school, and they were able to have a great relationship. And she was able to get him to do far more than most of the other classrooms were able to get him to do.
Wow. Oh my gosh, what a gift. So if someone's listening right now and they have a kid that is out of the box, I would love for you to list some things that, you know, would be considered out of the box. 'Cause sometimes people think, oh, you're just talking about ADHD, but we're not just talking about that. There's a lot of different things. But if someone is listening and they have a kid who is out of the box and you've got this phenomenal book, what would be like if you could say, look, if you can't read the book, here's the one thing I want you to know from the book, or the one tool that I would love for you to get, what would that be, and what would you say to that person?
So I would say, do you want me to explain what
Yes,
an out of the
please.
box kid is first? Okay. So an out of the box kid, or that kid, as I describe it in the book, an out of the box kid is a kid who other people describe as too much, too loud, too forceful, too annoying, too busy, too wild, or not enough. They don't pay attention enough. They don't apply themselves enough. They aren't caring enough. They aren't empathetic enough. They don't care about other people enough. They don't put enough hard work in, whatever those things are. And it then becomes a struggle, right? They struggle with relationships. They struggle in school. They might struggle with their siblings. They struggle at home. But in different situations, they struggle. And maybe deep down, you know they're a good kid, but you're being told or you're getting the impression that they're not because they're struggling in so many areas. And so the one thing that I would really want anyone to know that's listening to this, no matter who you are, is you're not failing and your kid's not broken. Those are the two things that I want you to walk away with. You're not failing because just because you're struggling or your kid is struggling does not indicate that you're a bad parent. It just means that you haven't been given the information or the resources, the systems and tools that you need to be able to be successful with the kid you've got. Mm-hmm. Number two is your kid's not broken. Yes, your kid might be wired differently. Your kid might think differently. Your kid might be a challenge to parent, but I see a challenge as a good thing. In every area of life, we challenge ourselves to, you know, be stronger, to learn a new language, to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, you name it. There's challenges around us all the time. But when we place that word with a kid and we say a kid is a challenge, now suddenly it's a bad thing. And we need to fix it. And that's not what this is. Instead, our kids are teaching us to do differently, to think differently. They are almost forcing us to change the way that we've always done things or the way that we thought we were going to parent and evolve as humans. And the last thing that I'll say is everything that I teach, everything that's in my book, it was built for kids that were struggling the absolute most and kids that were in really bad places, the kids that are getting suspended, expelled, the kids that are going to end up at a residential treatment center, all of that. But this is all based on the science of relationships, of the brain, of the body, of the nervous system, of felt safety, sensory processing. We can get into all that, but it's human behavior and human relationships. And so everything that was built for the most vulnerable kids is going to work for every parent listening to this.
I love that. It catches everybody because you're really going for, you know, the one that's struggling the most, it's going to hit everybody. That's beautiful. Whenever you were describing, you know, number one and number two, as far as what you'd want people to know, what impact do you think that that has on people once they recognize that your kid isn't broken and you're not a bad parent? Like what does that actually do for us as parents to know and understand that?
So one, when we can remove a lot of those expectations and pressure on ourselves to be right, to fit into this nice, pretty box or these expectations of others, it reduces a lot of stress for ourselves and for our kids. And so I think that's number one, is that it reduces stress. And the reason we want to reduce stress is that our brain actually operates better when it's not under stress. Because when we're under stress, our executive functioning skills go down. And those are just the skills like our operating system. So it's like having a computer and it being completely full and it's bogged down and it's not operating and the fan's whirring really, really loud. Everything's running slow. It won't load anything. That's what's happening when we're stressed out in our brain. It's why we leave our coffee in the microwave. It's why we walk away from dinner that's cooking and forget that it's on the stove. It's why we walk into a room and don't remember what we walked in there for. That's all part of executive functioning. You add on a different wiring, ADHD, autism, anxiety, you know, you add on trauma, you add on any of these things that we all, you know, are learning about ourselves as we, you know, grow and develop as humans, then it just expands that even more. And so I think knowing that we are not broken or that our kids are not broken, and also we aren't, but if our kids aren't broken, we don't need to fix them. We need to learn about them and become attuned to them. And if we know that we are not failing, then we can say, okay, then what's not working and what can I do differently? I can build off what's already working instead of throwing everything out. Because in today's culture, especially in the parenting industry, I see that people are going for that quick fix. They're going for that cookie cutter solution. And they're like, if this doesn't work, well, then I must need to try this parenting. And if that doesn't work, I must need to try this parenting style. And I think we should stop asking, what kind of parent should I be, or what parenting style is best for me? And instead, how do I need to show up for the kid I have so that we can create the best relationship possible? That's it. And it's going to be different and unique for each of us.
That is so, so incredibly powerful. And that's very similar to a revelation I had from learning from Sally Clarkson, in that she gave a lot of room to just accept and love your child right where they are. And I think with the idea of like, am I a bad mom? There's so much shame associated with that, when in actuality, there's so many variables. Like, how could anybody expect to be getting it perfectly? You know what I mean? Between our personality types and our kids' personality types, and then the external factors that come into our lives, you know, it's just difficult. Parenting can be so very difficult, especially whenever we have an out of the box kid. Thank you so much for that. That's so good. Hey, powerful parents, Stephanie here. I hope you're enjoying the show so far. Did you know that statistics show that 88% of Americans say they eat dinner with their family every night or a few times a week? I think that's a pretty awesome stat. But if you're anything like me and you're an entrepreneur, then after a day filled of putting out fires and maybe various events testing your patience, sometimes it's hard to think of questions that can help you really connect with your kids beyond the standard, "How was your day?" When my kids were just littles, I put together a list of questions to solve this problem and to help us have something to connect with over dinner time. And now I would love to share my curated dinner questions with you. This is good for littles and for bigs. There's lots of different varying questions in there. And these questions are going to help to ensure that the conversation is not just lively, but will bring you closer to your children while you enjoy a delicious meal together. As a listener of this podcast, you can get access to these questions at www.powerfulparentingtribe.com. Once you're there, make sure to type in your best email, and I'll have my team shoot over the questions for you. Once you get the questions, I encourage you to make this a family affair. Print them out. Have your kids help you cut them out. We even grabbed a mason jar and my kids decorated it. And that's where we put all of our questions. And that same mason jar still sits on or near our dinner table to this day. We've been using these questions for close to 8 years now, and I've really enjoyed the fun conversation and connection that's come from them. I hope your family enjoys them as much as mine have. Again, that's www.powerfulparentingtribe.com. Now back to the show.
What are your thoughts, Dana, with what's going on in our world? And, you know, in my opinion, things are different now for our kids than they really ever have been before. And I had someone stop me abruptly and would be like, "No, you know, the computer's just like when the TV came out or the radio came out." I'm like, absolutely not. There was never a two-way channel put in front of our child and in front of us all day long, potentially, like it is now, especially with the information and the news and everything in social media. And it's changed the dynamics of how we live our lives. And it also has come into parenting. And I'm so curious at what your thoughts are around how that's impacting us and our kids.
I think there's lots of ways. I think it's a both and in the fact that the way that you guys, or you and this other person, was like, "No, it was the same when the radio came out, or it was the same when the TV came out." And I would say, playing devil's advocate for that person, I would say they are correct that when the TV came out, when the radio came out, it was like, all you do is sit around and listen to the radio. All you do is sit around and, you know, watch TV. And the same can be said years and years and years and years ago of all he does is sit in his room and read books, right? We can take it all the way back to that. The thing that's similar about books, TV, radio, and now electronics is that they open up the world for our kids. Now, what has become difficult in that is that we carry around a computer with us, every single one of us, right? Our phones, every single day. They watch us be, you know, almost like just tied to that ding, to the sounds that go off. They see us constantly looking at the news or constantly being updated. And as parents or the adults in their lives, using technology on a regular basis. Here we are using technology to better the world. And so they're getting mixed messages of saying, okay, well, I see it, these adults around me using technology every single day in every way. I can't go to the doctor's office without having to use a screen to fill out my information. The doctor comes in with an iPad and uses a screen to fill out information. When my daughter broke her arm, they showed a TV and they showed her, you know, and they were able to zoom in and they were able to do things that we never were able to do before. And all of that's technology. So they're getting mixed messages that technology is bad, but they see everybody using technology. So that's really confusing. Mm-hmm. I would also say that kids are being asked to do far more by how long they're asked to sit in school, what they're being expected, what kids used to be expected to do in third grade, kids are now being expected to do in first. Mm. They're being trained to take a test. They're being trained to still be these like robotic soldiers when they come out of school. And we're not in the Industrial Revolution anymore. We're not in a place where we need just a bunch of factory workers. We need critical thinkers. We need inventors. Mm-hmm. We need people who are going to take the problems and the struggles that have come out of us having all this technology and do something with it. And so I think that's some of the things that we're seeing. Our kids are inundated with information. It is so common for kids to be, you know, to experience, you know, when, oh, sorry, my brain is like not having word retrieval right now, because as I was telling you before we started, I've been on a trip for 10 days and it was an emotional trip. And so word retrieval is the first thing to go in my executive functioning skills. So
same.
Let me back that up just a little bit. So I think about my daughter right now has chosen to homeschool again. She's at home. She was in a public school up until fourth grade. We're doing fifth grade at home this year. And we sometimes meet up with her peers that she was friends with last year. And I'll say, oh, how's school? And they'll say, oh, it's good. And I'm, oh, what's your favorite thing? They tell me and I said, okay. And so what's the thing you don't like? And they say, drama. I'm like, drama, you're 10. Tell me what you mean by drama. And they're like, oh, group chats. Let me just tell you, don't ever join a group chat. And I'm like, okay, tell me about it. Now, I then go back to my fifth grade and I think about the cattiness, the meanness, even though I know all behaviors communication and those kids are just doing it because that's how they express themselves. They haven't learned the skills yet. But now it's right there. The minute they think it, it's in a group chat. The minute they, and it's how they're connecting with each other. That is what our kids are having to deal with, is this constant being picked apart. We all did it. We all dealt with it. Mm-hmm. But it was on notes being passed, or it was on, you know, you'd overhear someone talking about you on the playground. That's very different than it popping up on social media. It's very different than a video being made of you. That's very different than it popping up in a group chat. And next day at school, everybody's looking at you funny. Yeah. Right. So our kids are having to deal with a lot of that. The other thing they're having to deal with way more is the sensory overload. I remember going to my mom's house and the TV's always on the news. And so it's just constant sound, no matter what is going on. You go into a restaurant and there's four TVs on and there's the radio playing, or, you know, and so it's just constantly being inundated with information. So that is another way that it is hard on kids. And then they're expected to process and make sense of all of this on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, it's so true. How are you handling it? Like with your kids, like, do you have any unique perspectives on how you handle screens in your home?
So I think that mine is probably going to ruffle a lot of feathers here. I don't have a lot of boundaries or routines around screens.
Uh-huh.
When they were growing up, it was keep them out of my house as long as possible. And then my mom gave my son a Kindle or something, you know, a Leapfrog. That was how I'm aging myself, right?
Yep, I remember those.
Gave my son a Leapfrog at like age 5. And I was appalled. How dare you? Don't do that. Like, I can't believe you brought this screen into my house. Like, and it was the same thing with candy too. We had had Halloween and the candy was over the fridge and a babysitter babysat one night and my three-year-old looks up there and it was like pointing at it, the candy bin. And she goes, yeah, I gave him this, this, and this. He was pointing at it. I just assumed that's what you guys give him. I'm like, he's never had candy before in his life. He was three. Like, he's never had candy before. He just wanted to carry the bucket around. Because he thought those were just toys. Gosh. He didn't know they were edible. Right. So that's how I was with my first two. Like, let's just completely avoid it. Like, they're not going to have candy. They're not going to have electronics. We're going to keep it out of their life as long as possible. We're going to be totally crunchy over here. Right. And then with my daughter, all that went out the window because my kids are 6 and 8 years older than her. And so by the time she was born, they're already watching TV. They're already on YouTube. They're already doing these things because and they had a second family to go to where their dad didn't care if they watched TV or were on the phone or did these things. So I just started realizing they're going to be around these things. So I would rather teach them the skills of how to use these things to work for them instead of against them. So my daughter isn't in group chat. She chooses not to be a part of any of that because that does not serve her. And she knows that language. She'll even say, this is not healthy for me. This doesn't make me feel good. If someone was to show her something online that was inappropriate, she would say, I don't like that. I'm getting off of here right now. If someone was to say something in a chat, she would say, it's time for me to go now. I'm sorry. Not because I'm forcing her to, not because I've told her she's not allowed to, but because we've had an open and honest conversation about what makes her feel good, what is healthy, what is not healthy. And so, you know, my kids do probably get way more screen time than they quote unquote should or shouldn't get. But they also are now schooling at home. And so they're doing that on the screen and they're able to show me things and teach me things that they wouldn't do. My daughter's taking a class online on how to create an Etsy course. Like, I want her to have those skills. Cool. My 16-year-old is like, I really want to work for you, Mom. Can I take a course on podcast editing and on video editing? I'm like, heck yeah, you can. Like, let's get on that. And you know, those are skills they're going to be able to use for a long time. So I want them to have a healthy relationship with electronics the same way I want them to have a healthy relationship with food.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That is so true. We literally were just talking about this in the car on the way home today with my daughter, just talking about how sometimes it can just really feel like everything is stacked against us, especially on the food side of things with the processed foods and making wise choices. And the same thing goes with technology, because even if you know, we're trying to hold a line of like, no technology in the house, it's like, there's only so far that you get to. For us, you know, we did hold off for a long time with my two boys. They didn't get a phone until they were like 17, but we have computers in the house. Like, we're huge technology people. And so we would have game days where they would have certain time chunks to be able to play games. But other than that, it was like for via permission or if our family was playing together. But then, you know, as your olders get older, it has to change dynamically for what is needed for the family at that time. And sometimes the olders get a little bit resentful. It's like, wait, I didn't get that until I was and so I think having the freedom and the liberty to be able to make those decisions where you are for what's good for your family then is so important, despite what your older kids
might. And I think it's really think important to make decisions based on your values and based on your vision for your family and not based on fear.
Yes.
So if you're making your electronics decisions, your screen time decisions, your food decisions, your who you play with decisions based out of fear versus the relationship and what you're teaching your kids and the skills they're learning, then it's not going to help them in the long run, because eventually they're going to still find a way to get that thing, to do that thing that you're telling them is not allowed in your house. I would much rather have a very open relationship and be a guide and a mentor to them and help them know how to use this tool versus this is not a tool we touch.
Do you have any recommendations? Because I'm sitting here picturing someone listening to this podcast right now. I always try to put my kind of heart and my mind into who might be listening. And I wonder, you know, some people, they definitely don't default to the kind of parent that we're actually talking about right now, right? Where we're able to go in and we're able to say, all right, this is what it's going to look like right now. And, you know, have the emotional intelligence and the wherewithal in the moment to handle it how we want to handle it. Versus some things that might have come through how we were parented that have become defaults. What kind of recommendations do you have for people who are like, yeah, it's like that there's a scripture. It's like, I know that I shouldn't do what I should not do, but yet I do what I don't want to do. And it's like this crazy thing. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, like what would your advice be to those who are listening that are like, man, Dana, you make that sound so easy. Like, how am I supposed to do that? You know, my mom yelled, I yell, that's what I do. Or, you know, my mom didn't have a backbone. I'm not sure how to tell my kid no in a way that doesn't make me feel guilted into shame for the next 3 days. You know, and there's so many different scenarios where we walk around with all this shame and guilt. And what I'm hearing coming through from you is a message of not walking in shame as a parent.
Yes.
And so what would your advice be to someone who might be listening going like, yeah, it works for you, Dana. Yeah.
Okay. So first and foremost, I am Italian. And if you know anything about Italians, Italians are known as yellers. I just helped my family with the eulogy for my great uncle, 98 and a half years on this planet. And in the eulogy, they talked about how loud the Brashotti family was, right? So I grew up being told that I'm Italian, therefore I must yell. So if you're thinking, yeah, Dana, you don't get it. Like, oh, I do. Believe me, I do. I grew up being told a lot of things about how siblings are supposed to fight. It's just what they do. That kids are supposed to push against their parents, and you're supposed to have this volatile relationship with your kids when they're teenagers, because teenagers are going to push the boundaries. And I have a beautiful relationship with my 16 and my 18-year-old, and they come to me for really hard things and really big, important decisions in their lives. And my 10-year-old and I don't know if we've ever argued. Whereas when I was 10, my mom and I, we were volatile. We argued and yelled all the time. So you can break the cycle. I want you to know that it is possible to break the cycle. The other thing is, I want you to like let go of that guilt and shame if you're struggling to break that cycle. There is research by Dan Siegel that talks about how we don't have to get parenting right. We only have to get parenting, get this, 69% right. I don't know about you, but I can be a D student. Like, you know, the achiever in me doesn't like getting a D, but I can do it. I can definitely get a D. So it puts the bar much lower. And all we have to do,
the cookie shelf just got way lower. Right?
And then we just have to help our kids make sense of the other things that we don't get so right. So let's say we've been parenting our kids a certain way and we're like, I don't really like this. Or let's say we're trying to change and we fall back into old habits. I always tell my students, kiss your brain and say, thanks for reminding me I'm human. Because our brains, there's two good things about our brain. One is that we do build pathways in our brain for information. And that is what you currently have going on. I call it a rut. Like literally, you've walked the same path so many times that you've carved a rut into a pathway of your brain of like, when this happens, I therefore will yell, right? But the great news about our brain is that it is multiple and changeable, and we can build new pathways. So this is neuroplasticity. Mm-hmm. We can change what we do. And that is why people are listening to this podcast right now. It's why we read books. It's why we do meditations, or we do scripture readings, or any of those things, whatever it is you believe in. It's why we do that, to evolve and change as humans. And it is possible to change. So when we fall back into these old habits, we have to, one, remind ourselves we're human. It is okay to make a mistake. And then we have to say, okay, what do I want to do different next time? And then say, okay, well, next time I'd rather do this. And this is where we do need tools. We do need a roadmap of what to follow. Luckily, I put it all in my book, so you don't have to spend 10 years doing it. But there's this misconception that parenting should just come naturally. And if we're trying to break the cycle of what we've always done, it's not going to come natural to us. And so it's okay to get support, to get help, to get coaching, to reach out, to learn new things, and to have people around you. So when it happens real time, not a month from now or 3 months from now, when you're like, okay, what should I do? Then it feels like you're trying to fix everything. But if you're like, yesterday this thing happened, this is how I responded, I'd really love to repair. I'd really love to reconnect. What can I say or do to reconnect and repair this relationship and move forward differently? That's where having a coach, having someone right there to support you can be really helpful.
Oh, gosh, that is so phenomenally good. And I hope that if there was someone who's listening right now and that was you, that, you know, you can shake off the shame and recognize that you have agency, right? I think that's one of the biggest things that I learned, I don't know, about a decade ago, a friend of mine talked about having agency in our life. And it changed everything for me because sometimes I, because of what I'd lived through, you know, had a victim mentality. And it's like, no, I have agency. I can change. I can be different. It just sometimes can be very, very difficult whenever we're faced with things, like we talk about, that have just been our only examples. Mm-hmm. All we've ever known was this one way. And so, but that's why life is so beautiful, because in this journey, we get sharpened. And like you were saying earlier, like, man, parenting is one of the things that will get us down to the core of who we are and force us to answer that question. How am I going to show up? Who am I going to choose to be in this moment for my kid? And man, there's not a better cause to rise to the occasion for, right? Mm-hmm. Dana, you are just absolutely amazing. And I want to make sure that everybody understands kind of what you have got going on. But I'm actually kind of jumping the gun, because I always end the podcast with a question, and I want to make sure I ask you the same question too, and then we'll get to that. So, Dana, what does it mean to you to show up and to be a good mom? Mm. Like, what does it mean for Dana to be a good mom?
For me, it is being the safe and trusted person for my kids. And that means that I'm going to make mistakes. I'm going to show them that mistakes are okay. It means I'm going to give myself permission to take care of myself and be a model for my kids that they are worthy of taking time for themselves and taking care of themselves. It means that I am also forgiving of their mistakes and accepting radical acceptance of myself and of them. I think that's what it means to be a good parent. I'm me in front of them. I'm authentically me. I make my mistakes. I help them understand what I'm going through. I share what I'm going through, not in a way where they need to parent me, but in a way where they can learn from what I'm learning from. And and then I'm just there to be their guide and mentor and help them along the way.
Mm. Oh, that's so good. How blessed they are. That's so good. So Dana, tell us about, I was so intrigued because you started talking to me, because I didn't realize you actually have a membership. And for those of you who are listening, you can actually try her membership for $1 trial, which is what? It's so cool. So Dana, will you tell everybody about your membership?
Yeah, we have a membership called The Huddle, and it follows all of the things we talk about in our book. So inside of the book, I talk about a 5-stage roadmap. So going from surviving to thriving, because we always try to jump to the solutions and to making rules and boundaries. And so our framework starts you off at the basics. When you're overwhelmed, you're stressed out, and you don't know where to start, we show you where to start. And then every stage has a plan, and those plans have 4 steps in every plan. So it's a mindset shift. So what are you bringing to the table? What belief are you bringing to the table, or what mindset are you bringing that's going to maybe make you show up resentful or frustrated or angry or hurt? So checking that mindset is number one. Number two is connecting with our kid. And that is radically accepting the kid we have, not the kid we thought we were going to get. Number three is understanding the need that's under the behavior we're seeing or the challenge we're seeing. And then number four is empowering both people so that you're that guided mentor and you're helping your child build skills for the future. And so all of our plans are built on those four pillars, those four ingredients. And so inside of the huddle, we have over 45 plans for the most common and uncommon parenting challenges for mindset shifts, what to say and do, how to connect and accept in the moment, what is really going on under the surface, and then a skill building activity that you can do with your kids that build your skills and their skills at the same time.
Wow. I love this. I would, again, Dana, I wish I had this stuff whenever my kids were so much younger, because I just feel like, wow, these kind of resources surely maybe existed back then, but to know they exist now for parents out there who are diving in now, especially if you have a strong-willed kid or a kid who's out of the box, like, you do not have to do it alone. And that is just a breath of fresh air, because it can be so challenging. And so I want you guys to check out the huddle. We're definitely going to put the link into the show notes, as well as a link over to Dana's book, Calm the Chaos. And also to Dana, I know that you are all over the place on socials. What is your social handle? How can people find you?
Yeah, so the best place to find, or best way to find me, is Calm the Chaos Parenting on every social channel, and even a podcast, okay. Calm the Chaos Parenting. Just type that in and you'll be able to find me.
Oh, I love it. Dana, thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate you. And everybody, if you're listening right now, I hope that you'll lean in and no matter what kind of kids you've got, if you've got the a kind of what you might call a typical kid or an out of the box kid, that you'll just lean in and get the resources that you need to show up powerfully in your parenthood. Thank you so much for listening. I truly hope you enjoyed our episode today on the Powerful Parenting Journey podcast. Make sure to hit follow and subscribe so that you don't miss out on any upcoming episodes. You're not going to want to miss a thing, I promise. If you were impacted by this episode, do me a favor and leave a review with a comment. I read every one of them, and I also pass them along to our guests. If this episode made you think of someone, go ahead, take a screenshot and share this episode with them, or post it on your social media to share with friends. You can catch the show notes for this episode and any mentioned links at powerfulparenting.com/podcast. If you want to see more behind the scenes with me and my guests, be sure to find me on Instagram or Facebook. It's where we can have deeper conversations on these podcasts. Take care. And remember, it's not about being a perfect parent. It's about taking each day and working on showing up powerfully for our kids. They deserve it, and you are the parent for the job. See you on the next episode.